The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is the delightful comedian Beth Lapidus. We'll also have a visit from our Mevina on Jewish ethics, Amy Hirschberg-Letterman, storyteller Jordan Hill, and our expert on the international scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. Two Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. As all of you faithful listeners to Two Jewish know only too well, there are many, many Jewish holidays, starting with our weekly celebration of Shabbat and extending to festivals joyous, serious, somber, and even silly. There are five officially major Jewish holidays over the course of the year, some of them as long as 8 days, and two very popular but officially minor festivals, plus an additional five or six commemorations or fast days, plus entire seasons of the year, ranging from a month to 7 weeks, that are technically special. Although I know you are all brilliant people and fine scholars. After all, you're wise enough to listen to Two Jewish with some regularity, and that must prove it. Still, chances are, even you can't name all the Jewish holidays without checking a calendar. Well, for those of you scoring at home, beginning with the Jewish New Year in the fall, they are, drum roll please, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Minyan Atzeret, Simchat Torah, Chanukah, Tu Bishvat, Purim, Pesach, Yom Ha'atzmaut, Lag BaOmer, Shavuot, Tisha B'Av, and Slichot. And that omits a number of other minor festivals that many Jews observe. Or if you prefer, I can do that recitation of the festivals in English. The Jewish New Year, the Day of Atonement, the Festival of Tabernacles, the Rejoicing of Torah, the Festival of Lights, the New Year for Trees, the Feast of Esther, Passover, Israeli Independence Day, the 33rd day of the Counting of the Omer, the Festival of Pentecost, the 9th day of the month of Av, the Penitential Season. Somehow it sounds better in Hebrew. In any case, all of these Jewish festivals help to frame and embellish and even sanctify our lives, give us markers and observances to give our days purpose and joy and meaning. But with all that quantity of holidays to remember and observe, some of them are just bound to get lost in the shuffle. Unfortunately, for most Jews, the major festival coming up this week is the one they just don't do or even really remember. And that's a shame, because in truth, Shavuot, which begins Tuesday night and continues Wednesday, is a major holiday on the Jewish calendar that few people treat with the attention it deserves. It was on Shavuot, called Shavuos by some, that according to Jewish tradition, the greatest human interaction with God in all of history took place. At this time of year, about 3,200 years ago, we received the Ten Commandments in dramatic fashion, according to the book of Exodus, with lightning and thunder and smoke and fire and an earthquake and the blasts of the shofar ringing in the desert air. And out of all that tumult, God's voice clearly conveyed the great message of morality and ethics that includes the Ten Commandments. Without the holiday of Shavuot that starts Tuesday night, we don't have the Torah. Without the Torah, we don't have Judaism. And of course, if you don't have Judaism, we wouldn't have had Christianity or Islam or Western civilization. So Shavuot, Shavuos, the Feast of Weeks, the Holiday of the Ingathering, the Festival of the Ten Commandments, Shavuos matters very much. When celebrating a holiday with this much importance, especially a profoundly underappreciated festival like Shavuot, it's important to talk about what we really believe happened then, in this case, at Mount Sinai. Before we tackle that complex question, let's have a little play-in on the subject of Mount Sinai. From the wonderful ensemble The Boston Camerata, here's a little bit of a song, To Moses, Mi al Har Horev, literally, Who on Mount Horev, which is kind of a nickname for Mount Sinai, who spoke to God face to face? Moses, of course.
Mi al Har Horev, Hamini,
That was Mi'al Har Chorev, who on Mount Sinai spoke to God face to face. Listen, when we celebrate Shavuot, the major historical theological event in all of Jewish history, maybe all of human religious history, we commemorate this theophany at Sinai, the receiving of the Ten Commandments, and there is an important question. The key question for us Jews, and one of the things that shapes whether you are a Reform, Conservative, or Orthodox Jew, is what you think actually took place at Mount Sinai. For Orthodox Jews, God directly gave the Ten Commandments, and the rest of the Torah, and the rest of the Tanakh, the Hebrew Bible, and even in theory, the whole Talmud, the Oral Torah. Conservative Jews tend to believe that there was a revelation of the Ten Commandments. God spoke to us directly, these great Ten Statements. For most Reformed Jews, it was God's presence and connection that was conveyed, or perhaps in some form the idea of the Ten Commandments. For atheists, the whole of Mount Sinai was a collective simultaneous imagination experience of, I don't know, 2 million people. I guess I personally would vote for the belief that something happened at Mount Sinai, something amazing, powerful, wonderful, and potent, so powerful it has remained in content and memory at the heart of all Western religion ever since. I don't think God recited all Ten Commandments aloud to everyone. Even some ancient Midrashim state that only the first two commandments were actually given orally. And I certainly don't believe the whole Torah was given at Sinai, and absolutely not the Talmud with it. But as a Reform Jew, and of course a Reform rabbi, I do believe that something tremendous and profound was conveyed. That at Mount Sinai we experienced God as we never had before or since. And so as we celebrate this experience on Shavuot this coming Tuesday night and Wednesday with prayer and celebration, it's a good time to think about what we personally believe about our own tradition and how we might best understand the meaning of Torah in our lives. Play us in a little more on this lovely late spring morning. It has been a glorious season in the Sonoran Desert where I live, by the way. May it not get hot until July. We have a lovely arrangement of a song that gives thanks to God, Odel Eli, recorded by the Yale a cappella group Magevet. Dum 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 That was the song Odel Eli, I give thanks to my God. first recorded by the late Ofra Chaza, but sung here by the Yale a cappella group, Magevet. When we come back on Too Jewish this morning, our guest will be the delightful Jewish comedian Beth Lapidus, here in Tucson this coming Saturday night. Meet her when we come back on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Where does the Torah come from, and what is it? Join us at Temple Emmanuel as we explore the central text of Jewish tradition with our rabbis, searching for the answer to the big question, what is the Torah, and who wrote it? It's all part of a great evening of study, self-exploration, and of course, superb desserts at the temple. On the holiday of Shavuot, Tuesday night, May 18th, beginning at 8 p.m., join us for the Tikkun Leil Shavuot, an all-evening study session at Temple Emmanuel. That's this coming Tuesday night, May 18th, beginning at 8 p.m. with Rabbi Sam Kohan at Temple Emmanuel, 225 North Country Club Road. For a fabulous nighttime study session and a cheesecake bake-off, call 327-4501 for directions and more information on this great program. It's open to everyone and free with fabulous dairy desserts. Explore what you really believe and find out what the Torah really is at Temple Emmanuel, 327-4501.
We're delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning, Beth Lapidus. She's a writer, comedian, TV and radio personality who's appeared on Sex and the City, Politically Incorrect, and NPR's All Things Considered, an interesting array, I might add. Her monthly syndicated column is My Other Car is a Yoga Mat. She's written for many newspapers and magazines, including the LA Times and O Magazine. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning.
All right, so which was more fun, Sex and the City or All Things Considered?
Well, obviously, Sex in the City.
You're not going to be any more explicit than that, are you?
Oh, well, God, oh, sure, I could tell you. All Things Considered. I love doing All Things Considered. As you know, radio is so much fun to do.
It
really is. Sex in the City, though, I met Baryshnikov. So I'm going to say Sex in the City.
Who was a recurring character and bloody handsome.
And lovely. I was there actually on his first day of shooting, and I may have been the only person in the world who ever made Baryshnikov trip over his own feet.
Oh my God, that's a talent.
It was quite something.
And how did you manage to do that?
Well, I had had a dream years before that I was dancing with him in an underground parking garage, which should have been a very scary place, but I was dancing with him, so it was really beautiful. And the producers knew about this dream, and they were like, are you going to tell him your dream? I was like, no. And they were like, tell him your dream. And I really just was like, no. And then they like kind of pushed me at him and said, tell him your dream. And I told him the dream, and of course, then I see him just like one of a million women, I'm sure, who were throwing themselves at him, which, and it totally was not that kind of dream. It was really an art dream.
Of course not.
Yeah.
No one would even think that.
No, who would?
Right, right. And so how did he trip?
Running from me.
Well, you know, I really do think that the lasso is maybe a little over the top.
Could have been a little over the top. But then he did come watch me do my scenes, which was lovely. And he was so lovely to work with. And that whole show, you know, it was such a family. They'd been working together. This was the last season. And one of the nicest things about, you know, show business is when people have worked together for a long time, that creative spark that grows and grows, you know, until the fire is really well tended. And with people who have worked together for a long time and are on a really great, you know, path with each other, which that show really, those people, those writers and producers and actors had been together at that point for six seasons.
Sure,
and
sure.
That's so special to be part of. And I knew them all because they had been doing my shows on Cabaret, my comedy shows. You know, they'd all been part of my show. So it was really very family. And that was really super fun.
Well, we will talk much more about your cabaret, including your show 100% Happy 88% of the Time, which will be here in Tucson soon.
Yes.
When we come back shortly on Too Jewish with Beth Lapidus.
If your parents or loved ones are in need of advanced assisted living care, then you should know about Handmakers Tynan Neighborhood. It's the only program of its type in Tucson and is designed for seniors whose needs have exceeded the care available from other assisted living programs. Dorothy Ho is a resident at Handmaker, and she's very pleased with her living arrangements.
My apartment is very comfortable. It's kind of like home now. And everybody here is very pleasant, too.
Dorothy's daughter Gretchen's experience speaks volumes about Handmaker's approach to family and loved ones.
When she first came to Handmaker, I can honestly say that I felt as loved and cared for as my mother has stated recently that she feels she is loved and cared for here.
Handmaker is centrally located on Rosemont, just south of Grant, and includes one and two-bedroom suites, cozy studios with patios and balconies, along with a wonderfully caring staff.
I don't even consider them staff, they're friends.
Phone Handmaker today for your tour and consultation, 322-7035, or visit handmaker.org.
You'll laugh and learn and have a fabulous inspirational time. This coming Saturday night, May 22nd at 7:30 p.m., Temple Emmanuel's Women of Reformed Judaism hosts a one-woman comedy show, 100% Happy 88% of the Time with funny lady Beth Lapidus. This great show is at Temple Emmanuel Saturday night, May 22nd at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are $20. Call 398-9729 to reserve yours or just come. Everyone's invited to laugh with Beth Lapidus this Saturday night. Temple Emmanuel is located at 225 North Country Club Road, just north of Broadway.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch, or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or call 520-327-4501 or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can also get CDs of past and present shows through the website or downloading us from there or at the Apple iTunes Store as popular Jewish podcasts. We are now pleased and serene to welcome back a long-missing but recurring feature of Too Jewish, Zen Judaism. When faced with disaster, be calm and serene. Breathe deeply and fully, and then shry, Oy Gewalt, from your inner core. Consider the tree, standing steadily in the face of rain and sun, weathering the chaos of the world without bending. You too can be like that tree. Of course, then you'll never get anywhere. Better to be an accountant, like your cousin Bernie. And what is the sound of one hand clapping? Who knows? That was a series of koans on Zen Judaism. We welcome our Mavinta, our expert on Jewish ethics, Amy Hirschberg-Lenerman. Good morning, Amy, and bienvenidos.
Oh, muchas gracias.
So you're just back from Guatemala visiting your daughter, being Jewish, you know, down there.
I have to say, first of all, Guatemala is an amazing country. We were in Antigua, and we were at Lake Atitlan and Tikal. It's a great, great country, and she is thriving. And I have found something to be a fascinating dynamic that I don't think is unique to my daughter. I think it's probably something that we don't really see very often, but when we do see it, it's pretty profound. And that is, how do we experience our identity in a foreign land or culture which is predominantly non-Jewish? Certainly, my daughter first experienced this when she lived as a senior in high school in Brazil, and now again in Guatemala, both countries of which are almost all Catholic, and know very little about the Jewish tradition and culture. What's amazing is that in both countries, and predominantly in Guatemala, there's a very visible Chabad presence. So believe it or not, there are Shabbat dinners being held on a regular basis throughout different cities where many Israelis tend to come to. And because of things like Facebook, there is a way to actually access in a country you've never been to before where Shabbat may be happening. My daughter actually took a bus for Pesach and traveled 7 hours to go to a Seder with a group of Israelis on the lake in Lake Atitlan. And she said it was an amazing Seder. I mean, they brought in matzah, that, you know, we sent boxes from the United States so she'd have some for the week so she could keep Passover. But they bring in everything that they need, and there is a very strong sense of identity and community around Shabbat and holidays in these foreign countries, because people from all over seek each other out to experience their Judaism as a community.
Well, you know, the fascinating part for me in traveling is experiencing Jewish life in all these other places. Sometimes it's what we import, and sometimes it's the homegrown variety, which is slightly different or moderately different or dramatically different. And that's, you know, it's just sort of a rich Jewish cultural experience that you can't really get hanging around at home.
No, you can't. I think there's something very chilling about walking into a synagogue where everybody is speaking Spanish as their day language, and suddenly you flip to Lechad Odi, and you have a way to also communicate with the Hebrew prayers that have been recited for thousands of years.
Right.
It's a really beautiful, it's a beautiful way of linking traditions together.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for helping us make those connections, and we will talk next week.
Lehit ra'ot, shalom.
Adios.
Adios. Exactly.
Vaya con Dios. Thanks, Amy.
You bet.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, from Two Jewish Storyteller Jordan Hill, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We speak weekly with the outstanding chef, Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant in the J Bar. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Isn't it a beautiful spring?
It is an absolutely gorgeous spring. We have been enjoying it out on the patio at J Bar every single day.
And I'll bet there are special tastes besides all the special flowers of spring.
Well, it's springtime, and so we've got all the spring items. We've got great tacos made with wild halibut, beautiful beets that were roasted and tossed with a sweet pea and ginger vinaigrette and Arizona pink grapefruit. We've got catfish done in pecans with an orange sauce. Great stuff at J Bar right now. All new menus, too.
It makes me, you know, unbelievably hungry. What's the best way for people to call you?
Give me a call at the restaurant, 615-6100. Go to our website, janos.com. You can make reservations right from our website.
www.janos.com, the best way to spend the spring here in Tucson.
Thank you, Rabbi.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international scene, the extraordinarily well-traveled Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We started talking about interesting Jewish places to visit this summer, if you're fleeing the heat, although some of them are warm places, but still extraordinarily interesting. Talked about the former Ottoman provinces of the former Yugoslavia and Greece and sort of that part of the Eastern Mediterranean. Where else can people find interesting Jewish sites in the world?
Well, I think pretty much anywhere in Europe, there's interesting Jewish content, either past or present or distant past. Certainly the entire Iberian Peninsula is just honeycombed with Jewish history, Jewish sites, museums, synagogues, etc., even if there are relatively few places there now with thriving Jewish communities. That, too, is coming back. You know, the Jewish communities in Spain and Portugal are growing, again, from zero to something, something more than zero. And then you have major countries in Central Europe, whether the former Habsburg Empire or all the little microstates that eventually banded together and became Italy in the second half of the 19th century. You know, Italy's now a major Jewish community. The Jewish community of Rome is big, rich, powerful, monumental. There's a terrific museum co-located with a splendid synagogue that was built to celebrate the destruction of the Roman ghetto and the triumph of liberal secularism over the Vatican, frankly. You know, Italy became a kingdom, and Rome was finally freed from Vatican control.
I'll tell you, I have so enjoyed the various Jewish sites in Italy, whether, and they really are unique, whether it's the ghetto of Rome and the synagogue there and the still vibrant Jewish life there, or the fascinating synagogue in Florence or Venice with its multiple synagogues, or right. some of the smaller places. There's so many interesting places to go.
I was actually surprised in Rome during the intermediate days of Passover. All the kosher restaurants and even the Jewish museum were closed.
Right.
Now, the restaurants, I can understand them not wanting to go to the trouble of preparing all their dishes.
I don't want to do it in my house. Okay. Why would a restaurant want to go to that trouble?
Right. Although they lost a lot of money because there were a lot of Jewish tourists in Rome then. And the way I knew this, be a reasonable question to say, how do you know that?
Tom, how do you know that?
Every day outside the synagogue, there were dozens, if not hundreds, of Jewish families from all over the world, from England, Canada, South Africa, looking to get into the synagogue, the museum, the kosher restaurants, whatever. They're all in, you know, a three-block area.
Right there.
And they couldn't get in. And they were very visibly disappointed. And you have to wonder, like, okay, so they didn't open the restaurant, but why keep the museum closed and the synagogue closed
during
those intermediate days?
You just never know when things are closed in Italy.
Okay. So similarly, I mean, as with Italy, but maybe with, in one case, less ambivalence, and in one case, more, with France, with every little town in France, there's a Jewish history. They're sometimes going back to the time of the Romans, and sometimes going back only to the Middle Ages.
Right, only to Charlemagne, you know.
Right. I mean, always going back at least 500 or 1,000 years, and sometimes 2,000 years. And then you have Germany, with all the ambivalence and everything else, that certainly has a rich and undeniable Jewish history, which one would not wish to overlook.
Indeed, you know, even the communities where the Jews aren't there can have a profound history and are worth visiting. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Abe and Rebecca are sitting in an expensive kosher restaurant in Beverly Hills when Abe notices Rebecca staring at a man at the next table. The man looks decidedly drunk. So Abe asks Rebecca, "You've been watching that guy for some time. Do you know him?" "Yes," she replies. "He's my ex-husband." "Oh," says Abe carefully, "has he always been such a heavy drinker?" "No, not always," Rebecca answers. "But he's been drinking like that ever since I left him 6 years ago." "It's remarkable," says Abe. "I didn't think anybody could celebrate that long." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. Please be very careful who you tell that joke to. We now welcome our Too Jewish storyteller, Jordan Hill. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning, Rabbi. Another Helm story today, another one collected by Joel Ben Izzy. And it's interesting, you know, this one and the one last week dealt with the issue of light and vision in a place where vision was so clearly lacking. But take a listen into this one. Once in Helm, a terrible calamity took place. A fire broke out right in the center of the town. And, you know, back then there were no fire departments. People were running back and forth all through the night from the well with buckets of water, splashing it onto the fire. And finally, after hours and hours of fighting this thing, the people, weary, covered in soot, well, they'd put it out. And the sun was just beginning to rise in the morning. And everyone was so exhausted, but you know, a lot of the people in Chelm, they were a rather observant lot, so they decided that the sun was up, it was time to go to shul, to daven shacharit. So they went to the shul, and they sat down in their seats covered with ash and tired and complaining, and they were moaning about the fire and what a terrible thing it was, and also about God, and God who would send them a fire, who would create fires. And as the rabbi was laying his tefillin, putting on his tallis, he heard this amongst his congregation, and he realized that something had to be done. He couldn't have a whole service that was praising God and thanking God with people holding in their hearts this anger and this resentment. No, he needed to turn them somehow. And so he got up, and he looked out at his congregation, and he said, "Friends, I have a few words." And everyone looked up at the rabbi, and he said, "You know, I understand that this fire, it was a terrible thing, but you must understand that there's a good side to all of this." And everyone rolled their eyes. Oh, another rabbinic dialogue about how, you know, God is mysterious and has his ways and there's always a good side and But they listened respectfully. And the rabbi said, "You see, I know the fire was rough and it destroyed many things, but we should also thank the fire, because if not for the fire, how would we have had enough light to find it and to put it out in the first place?" And everyone looked at the rabbi and they said, "You know, for once, he has a point."
Thanks, Jordan. We'll get another story next week. And now a word of Torah. This week we chant the second portion of the book of Numbers, Naso, which includes a remarkable blessing. The Birkat Kohanim, the priestly benediction, is really three distinct brachot, three separate prayers, with which the ancient priests are commanded to bless the people. From its inception, this three-part blessing has had exceptional importance. The Torah quotes God saying, "With this blessing you will place my name on the people of Israel, v'samu et shemi." That is, this blessing conveys God's presence among us, offers God's protection. The bracha was given by the Kohanim, the Kohans, if you will, the highest class of priests, those entrusted with the service of the tabernacle and temple. We still use the blessing at every joyous life cycle event, and it remains powerful. The text is, "May God bless you and guard you. May the light of God's presence shine on you and be gracious to you. May God's presence turn to you and grant you peace." In essence, the Birkat Kohanim asks God to supply our most important needs. Most interpretations of it see the first blessing requesting physical safety and health, the second asking for material needs to be satisfied, and the third blessing seeking spiritual comfort and confidence. Without any one of these blessings, our lives become challenges. With all three, we are assured true quality of life. After thousands of years, those three elements, safety, grace, and peace, are central still to our lives, and really a gift from God. May you be blessed with each of these, with all of these, this week and always. When we come back on To Jewish in a few moments, we'll get the news of Jews around the world and laugh with our guest, comedian Beth Lapidus, who really knows what it's like to make Judaism funny. All that when we come back on To Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
You'll laugh and learn and have a fabulous inspirational time. This coming Saturday night, May 22nd at 7:30 p.m., Temple Emmanuel's Women of Reformed Judaism hosts a one-woman comedy show. 100% happy 88% of the time with funny lady Beth Lapidus. This great show is at Temple Emmanuel Saturday night, May 22nd at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are $20. Call 398-9729 to reserve yours or just come. Everyone's invited to laugh with Beth Lapidus this Saturday night. Temple Emmanuel is located at 225 North Country Club Road, just north of Broadway.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
President Obama has nominated Elena Kagan for the Supreme Court. If confirmed, she would be the third Jew on the nation's highest court, joining Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Stephen Breyer. This would mark the first time in American history three Jews would sit on the nine-member Supreme Court simultaneously. In fact, since all the other judges are Catholics, it would also mark the first time that no Protestants at all sit on the Supreme Court. Truly remarkable fact. Elena Kagan is currently Solicitor General, the second highest legal position in the country. She was formerly Dean of Harvard Law School and served in the Clinton White House. Kagan has never been a judge. You don't actually have to be one to be on the Supreme Court, in fact. Well, in truth, some chief justices weren't even judges first, but Kagan would be the first to go on the court without having been a judge since 1974. My bar mitzvah year, by the way, apropos of nothing. Elena Kagan is rather astoundingly accomplished, however, and it's rather upsetting to note that she is only 6 months older than I am. Puts life in perspective, doesn't it? Ah, but enough about me. While Elena Kagan's own Jewish involvement these days isn't well known, at one point her late father was on the board of West End Synagogue, a Reconstructionist shul in Manhattan, where she grew up on the Upper West Side. But apparently, she was the first bat mitzvah at the important Orthodox shul, the Lincoln Square Synagogue in Manhattan, one of the first in this country to do any outreach. This was back in 1974, you know, my bar mitzvah year, too. And she was bat mitzvah at the synagogue, whose rabbi at the time was Rabbi Shlomo Riskin. Her bat mitzvah was held Friday night instead of Saturday, and instead of chanting from the Torah, she chanted from Megillat Ruth, the Book of Ruth, which we will chant this coming Wednesday on Shavuot. Like President Obama, with whom she taught at the University of Chicago Law School, she's known to be close to Abner Mikva, former federal judge and law professor at the University of Chicago with very strong Jewish community activities. Well, we'll find out just how Jewish she is these days. In any case, right now, 33% of the Supreme Court will be Jewish. Wow, that's stunning when you realize that only 2% of the population of America is Jewish. And odd goings-on in Great Britain have some impact on Israel. With Britons uncertain of how the country's first coalition government since World War II will govern, the country's Jewish community is taking a wait-and-see approach to the new conservative-liberal-democrat coalition government. During the campaign, many Jews expressed alarm at liberal democratic positions on Israel, and now Liberal Democrat Party leader Nick Clegg, who last year called for a European arms boycott of Israel, is Britain's deputy prime minister. William Hague, the Conservative Party leader who during the 2006 Lebanon War called Israel's military response to Hezbollah disproportionate, is the new foreign minister. What influence that will have on British foreign policy is, like a lot about this new government, unknown. The new prime minister, David Cameron of the Conservative Party, has been a strong backer of Israel. It is one of the many issues on which conservatives and liberal Democrats have large philosophical differences. With so much on the government's plate, Israel, along with foreign policy in general, will be put way on the back burner, said Robin Shepherd, foreign policy director of the Henry Jackson think tank and author of Beyond the Pale, Europe's Problem with Israel. Given that both parties in the coalition will be preoccupied with the economy and the Conservative Party has shown no real interest in the Middle East anyway, the British Foreign Office will find itself in a very powerful position to influence the direction of policy. In other words, the Arabist-oriented bureaucracy is likely to inherit a lot of power by default, while top politicians attend to other matters. Could be even more political trouble for Israel, this time from Britain. In very different news, rapper Q-Tip, I'm not making this up, says he's going to become a Shabbat observer. Q-Tip, how do they pick their names, says he learned a few things about being Jewish on the set of the new movie Holy Rollers, in which he plays an ecstasy dealer in a Hasidic community. The movie premieres this week. I'm going to enjoy Sabbath on Saturday, so on Friday at sunset, I'm going to turn off my TV, my radio, I'm not going to do anything, Q-Tip said. And then when the sun sets on Saturday night, I'm going to raise hell. Yes, that sounds just like the Hasidim, I know. The movie Holy Rollers is based on actual events in the late 90s when Hasidim were recruited as mules to smuggle X from Europe to the U.S. I haven't seen it yet. Should be very interesting indeed. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We're delighted to welcome back the two Jewish comedian, author, performer, writer, radio personality, and dancer.
And yogi.
And yogi, right. You know, I'm sorry. When I think of yogi, I think of two things. I think of the bear in Yellowstone Park, and I think of the catcher for the New York Yankees, and I just can't get away from that. Tell me, doctor, what should I do about this?
Get into lotus position right now.
Yes. then I could call my chiropractor. Her show is called 100% Happy 88% of the Time. Tell us a little bit about doing cabaret and the kind of work that you've been doing.
Okay, great. I said on cabaret, which might have been a miscue. It was a comedy show that ran for many years.
Which is what made it un-cabaret.
Un-cabaret. You know, this show is a full-on theater piece, which is written and, you know, performed, and I rewrite it for each show particularly, but it maintains its, you know, integrity, and it is what it is, and it's the story of really my own eviction and how I made that the best thing that ever happened to me, and how I then realized that we're all being evicted from a time and a paradigm, and how we can, as, you know, a collective consciousness, make this very changing time into the best thing that ever happens to us. And it's really a show about change and how to deal with change, because, you know, the equation that I've kind of sort of, you know, learned was that change makes us unhappy because we cling, but you have to change because life is change, so you have to be unhappy to be happy.
This is, of course, it comes from, your own true life experience.
Yes.
Tell us how you got there.
How I got to understand this?
Well, I kind of wanted to know how you got to eviction before you...
Yes. Well, you know, that sounds, maybe more dramatic.
I realize it feels like we're doing method acting now. I want you to go deep into your pain, but...
Go deep into my pain. You know, all comedy comes from pain.
Yes. That's why Jews are so good at it.
Exactly. And, you know, eviction, of course, a very Jewish story. It's a very Anatevka. I was evicted, Greg and I, we were living in a fabulous apartment in Hancock Park, expecting to, you know, we were saving for a house, if by saving you mean spending.
Yes.
And waiting to get a job.
Hancock,
you know how Hollywood is. So we were waiting for the day, and new landlords, and they, you know, it was just new landlords moving their family in. But it happened to be the height of the real estate bubble in Los Angeles, and it was just at that moment in my life where I just really felt like I had been stuck to begin with. You know, I had been in a particularly stuck phase, and this was sort of the universe going, like, all right, you know, you want to get unstuck, well, let's unstick you. You get 60 days to find a new place in LA, and then you're out on the street. So this is sort of a story of following, you know, magical signs and opening my heart in a very comedic way to, we actually moved to Palm Springs, which they call the gay 90s. You're either gay or you're 90, or you're us, which we say we're homosexuals. We think we're gay.
Well, everybody's got to try for something.
There you go. So in a way, it's a story of, you know, moving to the desert and being, you know, yeah,
that
open.
Moving to the desert thing, very Jewish, you know.
Very Jewish.
That's,
and then my
Abraham,
parents moved.
Moses, you know.
And then my parents came too.
So you really covered every aspect of the immigrant experience. You brought your parents after you.
Yes, exactly. Well, they came. I was like, it's too soon. I'm still in boxes. And, you know, I moved to the desert for psychic space. And my mom's like, me too. That's why I'm coming. I was like, oh, okay.
So it's not that your parents are clingy.
No. They're loving. They're so loving. My parents were the most loving, loving parents. Like every Jewish parent, they're super, super loving. And they love each other, and they love you for even talking to me.
See, you know, that's why I'm doing it, really. Because it's just about spreading the love. So what are they prouder of you for? Being on Will and Grace, or Politically Incorrect, or Comedy Central?
What they are proudest usually of the newest thing. They are, I think they're just, you know, to give an honest answer, I would have to say they're most proud of me for following my truth, really. They never, even though they didn't come out of the arts and are very traditional and, you know, the shmata business and all that, I think they have always taken a lot of joy in my, you know, following my own light. And they've, you know, it's been always fun and exciting for them when I've done that. And, of course, when other people love it, that's even better. When I'm on TV, sure. But if my truth led me to being a painter and working in a garage, they would be thrilled with that, too.
You know, people tend to think that theater and stand-up comedy are not the same animal.
Well, in some ways, they're really not. Because stand-up, the main thing that you want from a stand-up club experience is you want to be in the moment with the comedian. And it's one of my complaints about most stand-up, which is why we started this, you know, and innovated and did the Uncabaret. When you go to a nightclub, you know, you really want it to be happening fresh, right there, right now. You want to know that never has anything like this happened before or will again, that it's a one-time only event. And I love stand-up. Stand-up can be more raw, more experimental, and more things work and don't work. When you go to the theater, I think if you're going to give an hour and a half of your time to a performer, you want to be able to walk away, not just with laughs, but you want that show to last, you know, a week, a month, a whole year, a lifetime. You want to be able to look back at the theater shows you've seen and remember 10 years from now, I saw this amazing show and, you know, I had this feeling. And you'll never get that from stand-up. You'll laugh and there's a lot of healing in the laughter. And stand-ups, you know, I developed a lot of this material in nightclub experiences. And there's a thing that happens with a club audience. It's so much fun. It's such a dialogue in that way. But the theater audience is really a part of the event in the energy. And, you know, I'm always, you know, putting in a new line here and tweaking that, and it's fresh and I'm still developing it, but that show that I'm bringing, I know what that show is, and I'm giving it to the audience in a different way than I experience stand-up as a performer.
What's your favorite part of 100% Happy 88% of the Time?
The whole thing.
Well, yes, of course.
Honestly,
but I mean, there's something you like better.
For me, I guess, I love when, you know, the funny parts, always when people laugh. That's my favorite part when I get, there's always a new favorite line, you know. I talk about, you know, everything's changing so much now that people in my life are either PICs, partners in change, or PPCs. People preventing change. So I talk about my relationship with Greg as, you know, we're really PICs for each other, and we have a lot of new policies. And one of those policies used to be no crime. And we're changing our policies all the time. And it used to be no crying fits after midnight, but that's not realistic anymore.
Well, I see you made progress.
Not realistic. And, you know, basically now no custom pep talks after midnight, only off-the-rack pep talks.
Okay. That seems reasonable.
I don't know if that's my favorite part, but there's always some new little thing. I don't know. You know what my favorite part is? Is afterwards when the audience tells me that they feel so good, that when I'm with the audience afterwards and the audience is saying it was so funny, but it was also spiritual, but it was deep, but I was laughing and I haven't had an experience like that in a long time, that makes me really excited.
You know, I've heard people describe really good comedy as transforming pain or healing pain with laughter.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, the little equation that you learn as a comedian is pain plus time equals comedy. That as a comedian, you know, that's what you make your comedy out of. And so for the audience, there's also up on my website, by the way, if people want to find out more about me, there's so much writing and links and everything at BethLapides.com, which is BethLapides. And I did a blog a couple months ago, the 18 reasons why laughter really is the best medicine. And there are actually 18 different physiological things that happen to you hormonally and your heart and your, you know, all these different organs. Actual healing happens. It's fantastic.
So I want to thank Beth Lapides for keeping us healing through laughter. You can see her show, and there's an ad running on this very radio show that'll tell you the time and place and everything else. Beth, thanks for a great visit. Your website is Beth Lapides, BethLapides.com. And we'll look forward to seeing you soon.
Thanks so much for having me. I look forward to being too Jewish with you.
Thanks, Beth.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
Where does the Torah come from, and what is it?
Join us at Temple Emmanuel as we explore the central text of Jewish tradition with our rabbis, searching for the answer to the big question, what is the Torah and who wrote it? It's all part of a great evening of study, self-exploration, and of course, superb desserts at the Temple. On the holiday of Shavuot, Tuesday night, May 18th, beginning at 8 p.m., join us for the Tikkun Leil Shavuot, an all-evening study session at Temple Emmanuel. That's this coming Tuesday night, May 18th, beginning at 8 p.m. with Rabbi Sam Kohan at Temple Emmanuel, 225 North Country Club Road. For a fabulous nighttime study session and a cheesecake bake-off, call 327-4501 for directions and more information on this great program. It's open to everyone and free with fabulous dairy desserts. Explore what you really believe and find out what the Torah really is at Temple Emmanuel, 327-4501.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
You'll laugh and learn and have a fabulous inspirational time. This coming Saturday night, May 22nd at 7:30 p.m., Temple Emmanuel's Women of Reformed Judaism hosts a one-woman comedy show, 100% happy 88% of the time with funny lady Beth Lapidus. This great show is at Temple Emmanuel Saturday night, May 22nd at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are $20. Call 398-9729 to reserve yours or just come. Everyone's invited to laugh with Beth Lapidus this Saturday night. Temple Emmanuel is located at 225 North Country Club Road, just north of Broadway.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be Alexandra Zapruder, author of the book Salvaged Pages, Young Writer's Diaries of the Holocaust. Our playout this morning comes from Mark Bloom. It's called Freilach Funk. My friends, have a Chag Shavuot Sameach, a happy holiday of Shavuot, a good Yontif, and a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Ele Hamdali, Hussein Abe, Ona Titale, Ele Hamdali, Hussein Abe, Ona Titale, Ele Hamdali. The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.